This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Where are we, Dave? Look where we are.
We took a step backwards in time, back into the old studio.
Are we on camera?
Yeah.
Is there a camera?
Right there?
Oh, hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi,
everybody.
Hi. For those of you watching on the stream, we're in our backup studio. They're installing some new equipment in the main studio, so we're in what used to be our main studio way back in the day when we first started like a decade ago.
Remember what was up in that corner behind you there, Bob?
Was it a TV that didn't work?
It was like an 8-inch screen TV
that really didn't work very well, was very staticky, and yeah, I do remember that.
Yes. Yeah, so, and I'm in a chair. I feel like I'm sitting at the little kid's table. I can't.
It's got a little booster on it, doesn't
chair.
It?
I can't get it to go, Bob.
Phone book to sit on or something? Little camper? yeah, it's an interesting day in here. Lefko's out of sorts. He's in the room with us, which is going to make you and I really uncomfortable.
You know what the problem is? We can't talk about him now.
No, because he can't. He can't pretend to ignore us now.
That's true too.
He can't pull that game looking down like, oh, I'm so busy, I don't hear you guys talking about me.
Yeah, so. I know. 2 inches away, can't really pretend I can't hear you.
That's exactly right. Now we're going to have to watch him eat all day. This is going to be rough, but we'll do our best. You guys can text in throughout the show, 421-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. That is always open for you. Coming up today at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer will join us on the program. At 4 o'clock, an old favorite, a Seahawk. Would you say he's a legend? He's had legendary moments, and he's going to be part of the preseason broadcast.
Yeah.
Michael Bennett.
Michael Bennett he was a big part of that, you know, turnaround. Remember when they traded for him? His first time in April,
the same year.
Yeah, they came in. That was the big blockbuster move, and it worked out really well. I remember when he was here, and then he went to Tampa and played really well. But he was here. I can't remember if he was an undrafted free agent or a late rounder.
Yeah,
I'll check it out. But
I remember that he was here. But
he got cut. And in the preseason, I was on the pre and post game radio show at that time. I had him player of the game twice in the preseason. Mm-hmm. And when they cut him, that was 2009 with Jim Mora. I was like, what are they doing, man? I mean, that was just one.
I never know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, well, look, I think this guy makes the team. And he ended up not making it. And he went to Tampa and then came back here and has become a Seahawk legend. And he's just, you know, he's just one of those guys you think of when it comes to that run that they had in 2013, 14, 15.
Is there a specific image that comes to mind when you hear his name? Well, I know there is one. But on the field, I mean.
the shoulder pads?
It's him on the bike.
Oh,
him on
yeah.
the bike is just the second somebody said, well, Michael Bennett, I think of him on the bike.
After the comeback win over in the NFC Championship.
It was a police officer bike, right? He was just riding around the field and people going nuts. It was just very funny moment. But it'll be good to catch up with him. He, along with Michael Robinson, will be part of the preseason broadcast team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Michael Bennett, we were told, is going to be a sideline guy. And then Mike Robb will be up in the booth. So that should be interesting.
Michael Bennett was incredibly entertaining. You know, and at the end, it was a little bit, you know, there were some moments and stuff where, you know, he wasn't his normal happy self. But
yeah.
I just remember him as doing interviews with him and laughing my butt off.
He was very subtly funny. Like,
yeah.
He didn't wind you up like, here comes a joke and a big punchline. He would just say things. I can't remember what he was talking about one day. Something about, you know, being a normal person. And, you know, I like to go out to dinner. I like to watch Game of Thrones. I like to, you know, he would just the way he would say things, and it would just come. And then his imitation of Russell.
Oh, Russell.
Remember that? Getting a reservation at a restaurant. Hi, this is Russell Wilson. I need a table for three. Like, wait, is that what he sounds like?
Yeah. And then I remember one time he made some joke and it took me like a second to get it. And then he started hitting me like, huh?
Eh? Good one, eh?
Yeah, and it was.
He's
funny as hell.
Yeah, that'll be good. He'll join us at 4 o'clock. Luke Arkins from Prospect Insider will join us at 5 and defend himself.
We got to answer.
I'm just kidding.
We need answers from Luke.
He just, you know, Luke is a great source of information. He's a great follow. Yeah. If you're a Mariner fan or just a baseball fan in general, he is a great follow on Twitter. So look up Luke Arkins. I don't have Twitter open, so I don't have his handle, but just look for Luke Arkins. But he's very much a guy who will tweet out just these very specific stats. I mean, we were talking about the size of Aaron Judge the other day, that he's 6'7", and we were talking to Blowers, like, have you ever seen anybody like that or play against anybody like that? And he brought up Dave Winfield, you know, just big guys who go out there and just mash. And then all of a sudden, there was a tweet from Luke like 5 minutes later of the most prodigious home run hitters that were over 6'6". And it was a list. I'm like, how did you find this so quickly? So, yeah, he's just got a knack for that. But he generally will put out a tweet and just say, basically, here's an interesting stat, and do with it what you will. Not making it a statement or offering an opinion one way or the other. But he had just had a tweet one day about something along the lines of the idea that the Mariners leading the league in fielding percentage makes them the best defense in Major League Baseball is preposterous.
I thought it was errors.
Well, fielding percentage, same. Your errors, yeah.
Well, it's two different things. I could have swore he said, you know, measuring it based on errors.
He said it was preposterous, was the word. I remember that
preposterous
part. Yeah. And I was like, wow. That's,
explain yourself,
that's very
Luke.
Un-Luke-like.
No, I'm sure he'll have a good explanation behind it.
And then you see you've got just a sliver of light between you and the teams around you that any misstep seems to shift the positioning of all these teams. Like, one team loses, all right, now this team just moved up a half game, and this team loses, all right, this team just popped up a half game. It's very tenuous, their hold on their wild card spot.
Yeah, and you look at I'm looking at the wild card race right now, Mariners number two, up a game and a half on Tampa, but you know, if you look at the hottest team right now, it's Baltimore, which is very strange because
I guess Trey Mancini was holding them down.
Apparently, yeah. I mean, and I saw on MLB Network he hit a home run the other day, this new team. And, you know, I don't know. That was a weird move. But they're 7-3 the last 10. And if you look at as far as the playoff hunt goes, the Mariners are second at 6-4. So, you know, they're the hottest team right now. But, you know, if you look at Baltimore and their strength of schedule, they check in at number 10. Toronto's at number 9. The Rays are at number 4 as far as most difficult schedule. So that bodes well for the Mariners, who sit still down at number 30 as far as strength of schedule goes.
I like that. I like that a lot. Hopefully they can take advantage of that. Meanwhile, Luis Castillo is a guy we spent a lot of time talking about after his most recent start in that 13-inning spectacular instant classic, if you will. And just looking at him being an ace, like we've talked about it. You start the playoffs today, he's your ace. He's your first guy out of the gate.
Yeah.
Jerry DePoto on with Mike Salk today talked about what he saw from Castillo on Tuesday.
His second outing was dominant. Actually, that game in general might have been the single best regular season game I've ever watched. Just the, you know, it looked like two heavyweight fighters just exchanging blows, which the Yankees, I think, from a national perspective, you expect that of, but I think that might have surprised the rest of the world from the Mariners. And you know, Luis Castillo is the starter of that. You know, 8 innings of what I thought was just pure dominance, the stuff, the location, the poise, the moxie. I thought he brought it all.
Run, 2 hits. So, and then, you know, he had 8 strikeouts, 4 walks in that one. But, you know, he gets a fair number of walks these last 2 games against the Yankees, 15 walks total. But there's lots of times where there are at bats with the Yankees, you're like, I'll take the walk.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. Especially somebody like Judge who.
Yeah.
Has shown if you make even the slightest mistake, he's gonna plant that thing in the stands. It becomes a souvenir. So,
but 2.71 ERA, 5-4 as far as his record goes, 105 strikeouts. Yeah, that's your guy.
One more on Castillo from Jerry, and again, we'll hear more from Jerry later talking about Chris Flexen being a member of the bullpen now, and then some thoughts on Sam Haggerty as well. But just talking about the poise of Castillo.
Yeah, you know, you saw it in that first outing in New York where, you know, it's not an easy picture to paint, you know, where you are going in, you're making your second start out of your last 3 at Yankee Stadium versus, you know, what has been the best offense in baseball, really, in a hostile environment, debuting for your new team. And to keep yourself together, to stay as composed as Luis was in that outing, you know, really made you look forward to the next. All right, if he handles himself that well in that environment, how will he do at home? And, you know, and then lo and behold, the crowd brought it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see his next outing, which will be at Los Angeles, according to going up against Ohtani. So nice. What a great matchup there.
What are the chances that now the billing is great? Ohtani versus Castillo, you look at it and go, that's going to be lights out or could be. We talked about it. Very often it doesn't live up to that. One of the two generally doesn't hold up their end of the bargain. They might be okay, but they're not stellar the way, I mean, I get tip of the cap, Dave. You know I hate doing it, but Garrett Cole the other night was phenomenal. Castillo was just as phenomenal, and then it became a battle of bullpens, and the Mariners win.
I'm trying to remember, does Ohtani hit every time he pitches?
Yeah.
Is he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no DH.
Yeah, right. So, it'll be interesting to see him go up against him, as far as when he's pitching to Ohtani as well. So, yeah, you got some stuff coming up here. Kirby, Gonzalez, Gilbert, Castillo, Ray. I mean, when you start going through that and going, okay, you know, George Kirby's probably the one guy that you don't, it's not like he's a weak link or anything. It's just that he is, you know, sort of unproven and still a young guy, and you never know if he's going to get touched up or not, but you feel pretty good about this lineup right now.
Yeah, he's pitched really well, and I love his command. The guy just doesn't walk people.
Yeah.
So, Kirby, you feel good about. I'm not sure where they're at innings-wise and what kind of markers they've got set for him, so we'll find out. Meanwhile, looking at the Seahawks, who will play preseason game number one, you'll be on your way to Pittsburgh tomorrow, right?
Yes.
So they'll be taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And all eyes will be on the quarterback battle. Pete Carroll talking about, as it sits right now, Geno still in the lead there.
Yeah, he's still doing it. You know, Geno had played well, too, and was really solid. He really started well. He had a couple great drives off the bat, took us down the field and all. In the second half, we weren't quite as clean with the stuff we were doing, a little raggedy at the line of scrimmage, and it showed a little bit. But he had a really good start and a good showing for it.
See, and you were there at the game. I was not, but just going off what you had told me, what I read from others, it just, to me, I'm a little more impressed by Locke going with backups against starters and finding success. Going with the ones, as Geno did, against the backups, that's great. You want success for both these guys, but his task is easier, in my opinion. I don't think that's a going out on a limb with that opinion. The task was much harder for Drew Locke.
Yeah. They were rotating guys in and out, but still, yeah, it's if you look at it that way. I have to say, you know, the one thing that kind of came through in the press conferences, and look, this is a new team. I mean, you know, we've known who these guys are over the last few years, and we don't really know a lot about some of these guys. So it's always good to hear them talk. And I have to say, Drew Locke seemed very confident. You know, you look at him and some of the things that he says, he's kind of an aw shucks guy, you know, but I was very impressed from what I heard from him, but I was impressed with Geno as well. And so, yeah, I'm with Pete. I think Geno is certainly still in the lead, but it's just going to make these playoff games, or I'm sorry, preseason games, so much fun to watch because, you know, we really don't know. I mean, you look at a lot of the stuff with the, you couldn't really gauge, you know, if the corner's laying off, you know, or guy catches a pass, how far does he get after yards after catch, things like that, because they were, you know, kind of shutting it down a little bit. So, yeah, I'm excited to go to Pittsburgh and watch this game. I know I was complaining about having to get up early and, take a flight out there, but
middle flight back.
I'm fired.
Are you
up.
Middle seat?
No, I actually got an aisle seat.
Okay.
But I guarantee
paid an extra
you,
$100 for 4 inches of leg room.
Well, that's on the way back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I have to get up at like 1:30 our time to fly back. But
they've monetized everything, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, it was like an extra $100 to get 4 inches.
Remember that commercial where the guy was on the plane and he's like dancing in place because he's got to go to the bathroom and he's asking people, "You have change for a dollar? You have change for a dollar?" Because they were charging. That's right. That's going to be reality soon.
Yeah,
you're going to have to swipe your credit card to use the bathroom. Telling you, you watch. That's going to be real.
Well, I think you've experienced this too. I guarantee you, the guy who's sitting in the middle seat next to me is going to be at least my size.
Never fails.
Yeah,
I never get the small guy. I never get a Lefko sitting next to me.
Yeah.
I get a Wyman.
Yeah, but you know what? If you sat next to Lefko and he's in the middle seat, he's going to be hogging those
armrests. We've talked about that plane etiquette. Yeah, it's not good.
He's going to be eating the whole time. He's going, "Well, these snacks are really good. I like these. You want these snacks?"
Get the cheese plate on Alaska Airlines?
These aren't as good as the other airline, but I'm going to go ahead and eat them. One more from Pete talking about Locke and just how he felt he handled the live game aspect.
Yeah, I think it was his most solid performance. You know, he's had really good days too, but I think that was the best one under the circumstances. He went with the ones and the twos, you know, and all of that. And he did, I really liked his poise, you know, and his comfort in the pocket, handling stuff, adjustments, calls that he had to make in line of scrimmage, all of that he handled very well.
He checked it down, Bob. Lots of check downs, Mike.
I would think that's going to be the offense regardless of who the quarterback is, right?
Yeah, and look, that won't last all year and it won't last all game. I mean, when you start checking it down, all of a sudden the coverage starts to tighten up. And it just was something, again, I'm not going to sit and rip Russell Wilson because he was phenomenal. His completion percentage was always really good, but I think.
But here comes the shot.
But I mean, I thought there was a lot of times that he either couldn't or wouldn't check it down, and I think that's, you know, some of those short routes, and you know, hopefully Will Dissly is a big part of that, but also,
and
you know,
Noah Fant, just the tight ends.
Yeah,
I almost don't care.
Well,
just
and Rashad Penny. You know, that was one of the reasons why they took Rashad Penny, I think, over Nick Chubb, because he had a ton of catches. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing always with running backs when, you know, they come out of college. A lot of the one thing that's really lacking is their blocking ability, because they just don't do it. I mean, if you have Rashad Penny on your college team, you're going to throw it to him and hand it to him. And so, but yeah, he's a guy that has great hands, and that was one of the reasons why they drafted him.
One more from Pete, just talking, and we were talking about, you know, who went with the ones and who went with the twos and all of that, and how do you split that up? And he talks about splitting the reps so Drew and Geno get equal time with the starters that they're throwing to in DK and Tyler Lockett.
We're trying to make sure that balances out, you know, just so that the evaluations, you know, are evenly set. It's going to take us a bit to get that done, but we're, you know, we're on it. This week is a big week. I don't know if you could tell this, you know, in today. We did a lot of switching and changing to make sure that everybody's getting to work with everybody. So it's a factor, you know, and I want to make sure that we're really clear on it. So it's worked out a little heavier in Geno's favor to get those guys their work so far. But we'll pick up on as we're going you know, I'm real aware of that. I want to make sure that that's not a factor, you know, that it's out of balance.
You know, I don't know if it's because we just didn't see Geno that much over the years. I mean, obviously, with your backing up Russell Wilson, even in practice and during camp, I just don't remember seeing him a whole lot. And he's looked good. You know, one of the things I wrote down, and I do remember that being a thing last year, that he was not good throwing on the run, and that he should just keep his feet still and not try to do that. He threw a beautiful pass the other day on the run. So I think he's kind of stepped up and he's getting more reps, man. I mean, look, you know, that there's plenty of improvement for, you know, not only for Locke, but for Geno too, because being a backup, you just don't get that many reps, and he's gotten a ton of them. So yeah, I think he's got a slight lead right now. And then, you know, but I was very impressed with Drew Locke. So I just don't think they're going to ask them to do much. And if you do throw deep, you've got two of the best receivers in the game in DK and Lockett.
And I feel like either one of these guys is going to have a fair amount of slack from the fan base. There's a large section of the fan base that has turned on Russ and want to sort of qualify his success. He was never that great. He's too short, blah, 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 all that nonsense. But I think what that does is it allows for mistakes to be taken in a better way. If Drew's the starter, Geno doesn't matter. As soon as they throw a pick, I think they're going to be more accepting of for a while. I mean, listen, if it becomes excessive, they're going to throw them on the coals. That's how it goes. But I think there's going to be a fair amount of slack. There'll be a bigger celebration of their successes and less hand-wringing over their failures initially, because they want him to succeed. They want to say, see, Russ, we didn't really need him. He was this, that, and the other. This guy's, he's fine. He made one mistake, but that's okay. I see a lot of qualifying mistakes coming.
Yeah, well, and there's just not a lot of expectation anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I think they're both in a good spot from that standpoint. It's not like there's too much pressure on them. So, yeah, it's a very interesting camp, just because you don't have Bobby out there. You don't have Russell out there. I mean, those guys kind of set the tone. Dwayne Brown, and got a bunch of young guys. And we'll talk about this later. But, you know, I was looking at Detroit watching the Hard Knocks. That was a decidedly more physical practice that I saw than the Seahawks have had.
All right, let's take two.
Well, we didn't get to this yesterday, but NFL owners unanimously approved the sale of the Broncos to the Walton Penner Group for $4.65 billion, and also prompted this great moment that I know, Dave, you're dying to hear from Rob Walton.
I'd like to thank Roger Goodell, Commissioner Goodell.
Commissioner Goodell?
Goodell.
How do you not know his name?
He owns Bob, he owns Walmart. He doesn't have time for all that stuff.
You just spent almost $5 billion of your whatever, $60 billion that you've got.
Yeah.
I'm imagining they've had some conversations. They've been introduced a time or 12. I mean, come on, man. Goodell?
You know what? I have to say, the one thing about that, it made me like Roger Goodell more.
Goodell.
Because he gets booed every draft, and he always handles it well. And if you go back and look at the video, he kind of smiles and looks up like,
You think internally he's going, really, dummy?
Yeah.
Goodell? Really? Okay.
He's handled that stuff very well, I have to say.
You pay me $40 million a year, I'll handle it well, too.
Yeah, bro. That's true, too. It's not like I like him or anything, but he's got some stuff. He's got some stuff.
Well, the Jets are filling up their offensive line with former Seahawks. George Fant has been there since 2020, but today the Jets signed Dwayne Brown to a 2-year, $22 million deal. It comes after they lost Mekhi Becton to a season-ending injury earlier this week.
I'm going to miss that guy.
Yeah, good for him, man.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. And, you know, I don't know how much of that is front-loaded. I mean, he's going to have to play, but he keeps himself in such good shape. And he was just one of the great pros that I've ever talked to, and got a chance to talk to him on the road. One time I saw him walking around Bell Square, and he's just super friendly guy, you know, would always talk to you, and he was a great interview and just a great player. So, you know, it was always with him, it was always like shocking when he got beat.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't happen very often.
That's a very underrated acquisition by Schneider and the team. Yeah. I mean, that's, people forget how, You don't think about O-linemen unless they screw up. We say that all the time. You didn't really think about Dwayne Brown unless something was happening, or, you know, so the guy next to him didn't do something right. I mean, he was as solid as it came. He was a phenomenal left tackle. And you got him when he was, in the midst of some sort of confrontation or conflict with the Texans. And, I mean, it was just a tremendous acquisition that paid off extremely, extremely well. And everything you said is accurate. Great guy, great talker, great player. Gonna miss him. I root for him. I hope he does well out there. All right. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, Chris Flexen has moved to the bullpen. We'll get the explanation on that.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
We got our buddy Paul Moyer joining us at 3 o'clock today here. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. The text line is there for you. 421-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We had the 253 chime in, Dave, and said, Thumb's forehead is shining extra bright from this angle. So for those of you still tuning in on the video stream, it's now a little darker in the room based on that tweet or that text.
Well, I have to check it out now. We might have to go full darkness next segment.
You can't have your shiny forehead.
Well, now I can't even read like the Seahawk roster because it's so dark in here. But whatever it takes to make Mike look better, we make the sacrifice, I guess.
Oh, man.
What are you, nervous?
Let's see.
You breaking out in a sweat?
He's looking at the video stream there, I guess. He's checking out. How's my forehead look?
This seat's not doing me any favors.
It's not, huh? Well, it's the lights have become a little dimmer in here, but that's okay. Meanwhile, Scott Service mentioned pregame yesterday. Chris Flexen was going to be moved to the bullpen. We saw him warming up in the bullpen during the 13-inning game. But Jerry DePoto on with Mike Salk talking about why they made that move with Flexen.
And we thought that among the pitchers we had, the guy who would adapt best to a bullpen role, because he's done it more often in his career, was Flex. And unsurprisingly, he was willing to jump into the bullpen and contribute. And I think the answer we got from everyone we spoke with was, hey, just want to win. And that's the answer we got from Chris.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I had not thought about that. He started out as a bullpen guy and, you know, just always thought of him as a starting pitcher. But yeah, I was kind of shocked to see that. We didn't really hear anything. I mean, I think the first we heard of it was when we saw it on Root Sports, right?
Yeah, I just looked at it going, okay, well, I was trying to figure out, wait, when did he last pitch? Is this his regular throwing day maybe? And, you know, we don't know how long this game's going to go on. They don't want to burn through all of the arms in the bullpen. I thought it was just emergency situation thing. But then we did talk about when they brought Castillo over. All right, how are they going to manage this rotation? Are they going to go six? You know, are they gonna pull somebody from the rotation? Or is George Kirby gonna be the guy because maybe there's an innings limit on him being his rookie season and all that? But Jerry talked about Kirby as well, saying he feels good, so they're gonna let him pitch unrestricted for the time being.
And we've talked a lot about George's innings and more importantly his stress level. And when we sat down and talked about it, and more importantly, when we asked George feels great. And, you know, he's not feeling the stress of the innings that he's building up right now. And we're just going to take it, you know, game by game and allow him to pitch, albeit on a pitch limit, and which has always been the case. But we're going to let him go until we see the stress starting to pile up rather than, you know, create a unique situation like a piggyback or use six starters and minimize the value of these guys taking the mound every fifth day.
I first of all, when you said, you know, George feels great, I couldn't help but think of Costanza going third person.
George is getting angry.
George likes his chicken spicy. But yeah, I mean, he's been so good. You look at his last start against the Angels. That was a 2-1 game. He goes six innings, gives up one run, no walks, and strikes out eight. I mean, and that's what I love is a young guy. A, you just love that he's able to go out there and sort of repeat his performance most of the time. But he's got command of his pitches. He's not, you know, the strike zone's a little different. You're not going to get that leeway, especially as a young guy with no resume with these umpires at times. And for him to have the command, you look at his all the starts before. He had four walks combined in four starts in the month of July.
Wow.
Four total walks, 24 strikeouts. In 20 innings of work. I mean, that's been one constant for him. And you look at June, same thing. He had four total walks in five combined starts. I mean, I love that. There's a million things to love about what he does as a pitcher, but his command as a young guy is fantastic.
Yeah. And that's something that we didn't see from Brash. That's where, you know, he struggled.
Brash had 10 walks in two games back to back combined. Yeah. He had six walks in one game, four in the other. I mean, Kirby hasn't had 10 walks in 2 months combined.
Well, and probably his best game was against Oakland back in July 2nd. Mm-hmm. They won 2-1, but seven innings, gave up just three hits, one earned run, one walk, and nine strikeouts. So, yeah, he's been great. And like you said this last time, not a single walk. So, yeah, he's looked really good. And, you know, I was looking at Flexen also, and, you know, he had a really good July. He only gave up six earned runs in five outings. So, yeah, it's been really nice with the starting pitching this year, because that was just something that they had to put together last year with all kinds of you pointed at the TV the other day, it was Justin Dunn was pitching with the Reds,
yeah, with
right?
the Reds, and he plunked the very first guy that he faced, and then the next guy that came up hit a home run.
I sure loved that kid. Justin Dunn was just a
super
great,
nice, kid.
Nice guy. You really rooted for him. Same thing with Justice Sheffield, but they were in a decidedly worse spot last year. And then, you know, really the same type of offense going on last year. I mean, they were at the bottom of, I don't know, at least the bottom third in almost every category, but their starting pitching was just not helping them out. And now you see the bullpen coming together, and the starting pitching is looking great, and especially getting Castillo.
Text still coming in on the Mac and Jack's text line at 421-3776. Trust me, the dark won't help Thumb, says the 425. And then the 253 says, Thumb needs to ask the Bogan about some makeup advice.
You think the Bogan puts makeup on?
Oh, I know that he does. Yeah,
I used to put makeup on. I was on TV.
Yeah,
there's a drop you could use as a promo, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll just cut out the TV part. Just TV. Have it. I used to put makeup on. Boom. Yeah. Back in his wild days, sure. Yeah. Just when he's night on the town, put a little makeup on, little blush, little eyeshadow.
Give you guys some makeup advice, maybe. And I just slather it on there.
Yep. Just slather it.
Somebody, you see the other one? It's the Kung Pao chicken that's making me sweat.
Yeah.
Kung Pao, that's right. I was just talking to somebody about Clayton, speaking of makeup, and I used to give Clayton a hard time. I'm like, you know, is this the greatest upset in, like, television history that you're on TV, John? And then he would come back with me and he's like, yeah, they tried to put makeup on Wyman and it just made him uglier. So he was always good. I loved giving Clayton a hard time, and especially if he thought he zinged you.
Oh, he loved it.
Oh, he would just be so proud of himself.
And then he would repeat it. You'd hear it at least five more times.
God, I miss that guy.
Someone brought up a good point yesterday when we were talking about the Lions on Hard Knocks. They said, I wish Clayton could have been here to see Bob's Lions on Hard Knocks.
Oh, that's right. He loved that. He got such a kick out of saying, well, your favorite team, the Lions.
Why was that?
Because I think we were talking about sort of changing our opinion on Campbell as a head coach, because when we first read his comments about, we're going to bite the kneecaps, and if you knock us down, we're going to get it. We were just kind of, seems meatheadish, and, you know, seemed. And then we were talking about his emotion during a postgame press conference, and it was sort of impressive how much he was invested, and the players loved him. And then he was like, well, your favorite team. They're your favorite team, the Lions.
And then the Drew Brees contract, he never let that go. That was so back like 4 years ago, and somebody asked about it, and he answered it. And then I was looking at something. I said, what about the Drew Brees contract? And he was on that every single time. Just loved that.
Absolutely loved it. We missed the professor, obviously. Some funny things coming out of him. Meanwhile, Mitch Haniger has been on a tear since coming back from injury, but will he be back next season? We'll get into that conversation next with Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer will join us on the program. Make sure you stay tuned for that conversation here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. And this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Mitch Haniger, I'm telling you, I've got to stop underestimating this guy, Dave. I was trying to buy some slack for him with the fans out there. Like, hey, the guy played nine games. He played nine games, and then that was it. We didn't see him again until this recent stretch of, what, five games he's been back. And I was like, all right, let's temper our excitement, manage our expectations. It could take, he's only got nine. This is like spring training all over again, starting over. I know he had a bit of a rehab assignment, but nothing of great substance. And much like he did last time, he just picks up right where he left off. He's had at least one hit in every game. He's hitting .429. He's 6-for-14 with a .529 on base. I'm just going to expect that if he goes down again, he'll be fine. He'll come back and he'll just pick up right where he left off. I mean, in a game that is so reliant upon timing and you know, the mechanics at the plate and getting that foot down and blah, 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 all the things that go into it, and just the slightest hitch in any of that throws it all off. To see him do that the way he's done it this return, and he did it before after his last injury, that is really remarkable. I want to make sure to talk to Blowers about that, because I think that is incredibly rare to see a guy just come in and just, he's hot. He's just who he was prior to the injury.
Yeah, because also in the back of your mind, it's the, you know, you always, when you come off of a rehab stint like that, you're thinking, I don't know for sure if it's going to hold up. I mean, in a game like situation, especially some of the ones that he's had. So yeah, he's just such a professional. At the other night, the game that we've been talking about and we'll talk about all year, where they went 13 innings. Did you see him by any chance? He ran it, because after LT hit the single, he was the first guy out there.
But he also was very smart.
He was looking down, like not jumping around.
Yeah, he was kind of on the outside of the pile. He was celebrating, but then he kind of removed himself from the area of contact.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was thinking, oh no, don't, somebody's going to twist an ankle. Don't do that. But look, the look of joy on his face, man, it was just so nice to have him back. So hey, I just texted Moyer, by the way, really quick. I said, are you ready? He said, I was born ready.
Of course, he's ready.
We got a feisty Paul Moyer today.
But the question here, and you guys can text in on this as well, 421-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Do you bring Mitch Haniger back? Do you sign him to an extension? He's a free agent after this season. Now, going into the season, I think there was some real question, because it felt like, well, you got Julio Rodriguez, you got Jared Kelnick, you got Taylor Trammell, you got Kyle Lewis, you just brought in Jesse Winker in a trade. You got too many outfielders. Well, that's changed in a very big way, because Kyle Lewis, I don't know what to expect from the kid. I honestly don't. I feel like you should shut him down or just let him play the rest of the season in AAA, because he's clear he can't play back-to-back nights. And when he does, he's out for three games, and you don't know what you're getting, and he was struggling big time. Kelnick, same thing. He is struggling big time at the plate. Still looks good defensively, still just has not found it at the plate. Taylor Trammell is still not back. So what looked like just a complete overload in the outfield spot is anything but. And you've got no assurances about Kyle Lewis playing on a regular basis, certainly in the outfield. And Jared Kelnick, I don't know what's going to happen with him.
No clue.
So all of a sudden, all of that depth looks a bit shallow. You've got Jesse Winker is not a great defensive player in the outfield. So, you could use some fourth outfielders out there. Maybe it's Haggerty. Maybe Frazier's gone. He's a free agent at the end of the season. Maybe Haggerty becomes your second baseman because he's a natural infielder. He's been playing outfield, but infield is a spot. But it just feels like Haniger, to me, it's much more important to bring him back now because I don't think you've got the depth you thought you had there.
Well, and a lot of it, when he was on the injured list, we were sitting there thinking, oh, it's the leadership and just his presence and everything. But like you said, his numbers, I'm very curious to see what he's going to fetch in what he would fetch in the free agent market. But you got to sign this guy back for all the reason that you just said, including Kyle Lewis and Jared Kelnick, but just because also that he's just such a great leader. This guy's a rock in that dugout during games. So, yeah, you got to bring Mitch Haniger back.
Yeah, I just feel like right now you've got one sure thing in your outfield, one, and that's Julio Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. After the season, I'm talking about. Haniger, I think, is a good right fielder. I don't think he's a great defender. I think he's good. He's better than Winker. So I don't know what's going to happen with Winker in the outfield if they just kind of continue with that, or maybe he becomes a DH on occasion and you find somebody who's a little more defensively tuned in, however you want to say it. But I just think you've got no certainties about Kelnick and Kyle Lewis at this point. And I feel like Taylor Trammell might be kind of a fourth outfielder guy. I don't know what his future is. So just to me, there's just so much more uncertainty at that spot. Now, people will throw the injury thing out there. And that's unfortunately been part of his story. He's had two full seasons as a Mariner where he's been injury free. Talking about Mitch Haniger, he's going to be 32 coming up. So he's not a young guy. He's not old. But, so I think maybe that gets you in a position to make what you feel is a palatable offer to him and reward him at the same time. Yeah, you're not 26. You've had this injury history. You're 32 with that history, so this is going to sort of dictate what kind of offer you're going to get. And hopefully the two sides can come to an agreement, because I think he brings so much to the clubhouse as a leader, at the plate. He's just, I think his presence is absolutely necessary.
I wouldn't put him in that category of somebody that gets hurt all the time. I just think, look, he got hit by pitches twice. Two of his stints on the IL were because of that. Everybody gets, Ty France gets hit with pitches all the time, but it didn't hit him in the face. It didn't hit him in the groin. I mean, that was just bad luck. And then, I don't know what to say about twisting his ankle. It's so weird that he twisted it to the inside and, he works hard. I mean, I feel like this is just a stint of bad luck for him, and that it's not, the injuries aren't a concern to me. He's not a guy that I look at and go, oh yeah, but he's going to get hurt. I think that's going to end.
Yeah. But I'm just playing it from the team side where they're trying to get the best deal they can. If they're haggling with his agent, they can use that and just say, look, man, we need a guy who's available. And unfortunately, in his year, he missed all of the pandemic season with injury. And then of the years he's played, he's only had two full seasons. The rest have been interrupted by injury. Just if they're going to bolster their case to say, well, here's why we can't offer you X, whatever number they may be expecting. Just I'm hoping it's not adversarial, that they can meet in the middle and everybody's happy. But I do think bringing him back is huge for this team. And I really hope it happens. And we'll talk to Luke Arkins about that, get his take on it. It's not that there aren't other players available, but you know who you have in him as a player when he's healthy, and you know who you have in him as far as his character and what he means to the rest of the guys in that clubhouse.
I bet you Paul Moyer has a strong opinion on that as well.
You think so? He was born ready, I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that too recently.
We'll see how ready he is for that question. We're going to fire that one at him. Paul Moyer is going to join us next, get us ready for the Seahawks preseason opener, get some Mariners talk in as well. It's all coming your way with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.